Door Number 8 by Francis Rosenfeld. Door Number 1. Space. Taylor woke up and got ready for classes, as if nothing had happened the day before, trying to avoid looking at the door, somewhat uneasy with the thought that if she did, she might not see it there anymore. The first day was filled with the trepidation of adjusting to new settings, and finding her way through the maze of buildings and hallways, and in all the excitement she almost forgot about the class that was supposed to start at 4. She hadn't had anything to eat the whole day, and stopped almost without thinking at the cafeteria for a quick bite. She thought she recognized the casual demeanor and the black hair, which she only saw from the back, and didn't remember where to place it first, and then, all of a sudden, it all came back to her, just as the clock struck 4. So much for our class and not being late. She thought, somewhat annoyed that she even took the guy seriously, disappearing doors notwithstanding, there was no reason for her to listen to anything he had to say, and his self-appointment as an authority figure only served to remind her that she shared a door with a complete stranger. Somebody is pulling a prank on me. Her old thought resurfaced. But who, and for what reason, really? She was just a random person, as average as they come, one of the many anonymous faces populating the campus, and quite forgettable, if she were to judge by how many of her teachers found it difficult to remember her name. She didn't want to confront her uncomfortable neighbor, and tried to squeeze by unnoticed and park herself at one of the tables in the back, eager for a warm cup of soup. "Do you come here often?" a familiar voice whispered from behind. She could almost feel the ironic smile that accompanied the question. Her shoulders tensed and she turned around reluctantly, trying to balance the exact blend of rejection and tact she deemed appropriate for the current situation. She didn't find it, so she fell back on the learned patterns of socially acceptable behavior that seemed to have served her well in the past. Since her mother had the habit of taking everything personally, Taylor had developed much better diplomatic skills than one would have expected of somebody of such a young age, and those skills had spared her quite a few unpleasant scenes that she was very happy to live without. "It's only been a couple of days," she replied, "I'm not sure that qualifies as often." "What are you having?" He made herself at home at her table, and she thought, "Oh, great. Now he's never going to leave." She crushed a few choice words between her teeth and smiled out of habit, compelled to respond by the good breeding her mother had worked so hard on. "Soup," she answered, and then figured it would be impolite not to reciprocate, and despite her better judgment, continued the conversation. "How about you?" He didn't answer, deep in thought, as if he was looking at pictures inside his mind, completely detached from the surroundings. Taylor cursed herself for being such a pushover, ordered her soup, and decided to ignore the intruder as much as she could. "I'm sorry, what did you say?" He suddenly came back to life, as if he hadn't even been there for the last 15 minutes. She did her best to make it evident, through nonverbal cues, that she found his behavior unacceptable, but he didn't seem to get any of them. He ordered a coffee and went back to his mental imagery, as if she wasn't there. Why did he bother to come to this table at all? Taylor fumed internally. She was tired, the day had been a roller coaster, and she really didn't have the emotional resources necessary to put up with the whims of a stranger, and the fact that their room adjacency forced some basic form of interaction on them made the situation doubly unfortunate. "So," he said, unperturbed by the hostile stance, "have you given any thought to our class project?" "Listen," she snapped. "I don't mean to be rude, but it's been a long day, and I was hoping for a few minutes alone to rest and sort out my thoughts, so, if you don't mind," she suggested, mortified by being forced into a confrontation she had done everything she could to avoid. "Care to share any of those thoughts?" he asked, as if the previous suggestion didn't have anything to do with him. "No," she blurted, shuffling uncomfortably in the chair and wondering what could she possibly say to this person to make him leave. "I think your soup is getting cold," he pointed out. Taylor finished her soup, which was indeed no longer at its peak temperature, peeved by the fact that this little comforting detail was spoiled for her too. He sat in silence, waiting for her to finish eating while sipping on the coffee with a pleased grin. He then took out a notepad from his backpack and scribbled in it for a while, until she got up, ready to leave. "Wait, wait for me, please." He rushed to pack up his stuff as she walked away, and caught up with her, just as she was passing through one of the stone gates leading out of the campus. "Oh, good. We're here?" he exclaimed. Taylor didn't care what he meant by that, she just wanted to get back to her room and work through the mountain of assignments that were due that week. She didn't even look at him, not a tad curious about what he had meant. "Where are you going?" he asked. "Well," she started to give him a piece of her mind, but was stopped in the middle of the sentence by the unfamiliar scenery unfolding in front of her eyes. "What?" She didn't finish her sentence, too shocked to react. "Welcome to Sydney," he beamed triumphant and then waxed nostalgic. "I always liked this city." "But how?" Taylor tried to dig herself out of a mountain of confusion and then suddenly remembered the previous day's conversation and got instantly infuriated. "This has something to do with you, doesn't it? How did we get here?" She tapped the power of her analytical brain, and after running through the possibilities, she came up with the one that was most likely. "Oh, God, I'm still asleep. I got to wake up, or I'll be late for class," she thought. "I can assure you you're fully awake," he clarified, as if he could read her thoughts, and pinch her arm really hard to get the point across. "Ow," she protested, staring at the red marks left by his fingers. "This is going to leave a bruise, you jerk," she thought again. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you," he answered her silent remark and then her next unspoken assumption. "And no, you're not dead either. How are we here?" She stared in disbelief at the graceful roof of Sydney's Opera House, which unfolded like sails in the wind on the background of the cloudless sky, surrounded by trees in bloom. "I think we can safely assume you found the door," he smiled. "But how?" she repeated her question. "I took the liberty to jot down some notes, you should look them over after we return. Speaking of which," he turned around to face the direction they were coming from, "you wouldn't have happened to notice which door we came out of, would you?" "What do you mean?" she panicked, realizing all of a sudden that they'd have to find their way back home eventually. "Please tell me we're not stuck here. I only have a couple of dollars on me, I don't have a passport, what am I going to tell my mom?" She started crying, to release her tension and fear and crushing feeling of helplessness. "Well, I don't think there is a need to bother your mom just yet, you know? We just got here. Isn't Sydney beautiful in spring?" He smiled and inhaled the fresh scent of tree blossoms with focus and deliberation, like there was nothing more important in the world at the time. All those years she had spent deadening her reactions to being dragged into outrageous circumstances against her will seemed to vanish in an instant, and she started yelling at her traveling companion. "You kidnapped me? I want out of here immediately. Take me back home right now," she screamed, and then her logic and reason returned, and she remembered that she had chosen that specific stone gate herself because it was the closest route to her dorm. "What have you done to me?" she continued ranting. He didn't answer, just waited for the dust to clear, and then continued where he had left off, unperturbed. "As I said, do you think you could remember which one of these openings we came out of?" He pointed to a busy avenue filled with shops, restaurants, apartment buildings and access to pedestrian alleys. "It doesn't have to be a door, per se, just anything that can act as a passageway." "It can be any of these," she moaned, staring at the sea of doors, dejected, wide-eyed and bursting into tears again. "That's exactly why we have to concentrate on backtracking our steps," he said, with inhuman composure. "Could you please stop crying? It's personally distracting and it dulls your focus. How long do you think we walk before you notice you're not home anymore?" She looked at him, still bawling, and tried to assess the timing. "I don't know, 5, 10 minutes? She hesitated. "I'm afraid you're going to have to be more precise than that. You know, 10 seconds can mean the difference between this block and the next." She looked discouraged. "What do you remember?" he asked. "Nothing, I remember nothing. 1 minute I was on campus, the next I was here?" "No, think. What do you remember?" he insisted. "You came to my table?" she offered tentatively. "When?" "After I sat down," she replied. "What else do you remember about that? What were you thinking? What did you see, hear, smell, feel?" "I remember thinking that you were pulling a prank on me, and if this weren't a prank, you should be waiting for me in room 8. "How did you figure that?" "It was the clock," she exclaimed, excited by the revelation. "I heard it strike 4. "That took you long enough," he smiled. "Thank you for being on time, as I said, I abhor the lack of punctuality. What else?" You were waiting for me? She raised her voice. Irrelevant. What else?
I ate soup. She sniffled.
Not a very helpful detail. Time-wise, people tend to grossly underestimate the time they spend engaged in an activity. Do you remember anything else?
You wrote some stuff down. She whimpered.
Again, not relevant to our task. Anything else?
He didn't seem agitated in the least, and his calm settled her nerves, so she stopped crying and tried to focus on the details of their previous activities.
You had coffee, she said, frowning uncertain. The coffee shop opens at 5. Did I spend a whole hour with a cup of soup? She couldn't believe it.
A little more than that, I'm afraid. The barista was late, he didn't arrive until 5:15.
How could I spend an hour and 15 minutes eating soup? She shook her head incredulous.
You're diverting your focus to irrelevant details again. So, at 5:15 I ordered coffee, drank it and wrote down 3 pages of notes.
What else do you remember?
Watching the sunset over the park as I was walking towards the gate, she said.
That could be useful. Do you know the sunset time for today? He said, suddenly encouraged.
Who knows the sunset time for the day? She retorted.
Baby steps. I'll just look it up. He pulled out his phone and did a quick search. It was 7:35. Are you sure you saw the sunset?
Suddenly she didn't feel so sure anymore.
How is your phone even working here?
You know what? Don't tell me, I don't want to know.
Well, it's 8:08 in the morning right now, so with the time difference, it would be 6:08 back home. You couldn't have seen the sunset, it's about an hour and a half too early.
Taylor looked so confused he almost felt sorry for her.
Don't worry, people often see what they want to see. You felt it was late and I was taking up too much of your time, so you thought it must be close to sunset, and that's what you assumed you saw. Time is a very relative concept, we all perceive it at our own pace.
So what did I really see? She started sniffling again.
I don't know, maybe a reflection in one of the glass curtain walls, or the river. He postulated.
It doesn't matter.
What else do you remember?
The last thing I saw before I walked through the gate was the clerk drawing down the shutters on the store across the street.
Okay, so that's 6 o'clock. Great work, he encouraged, and then checked the 6 o'clock time on his notes.
You already knew, she exploded.
Cross-referencing is always helpful, he countered. It was 6:02, to be precise, you remember me telling you about the successful crossing? So, we have about 6 minutes between then and now. I didn't time this conversation, so that puts us at a small disadvantage, but at least we refined the search to the openings between here and 5 minutes ago. Let's see how far that takes us.
They picked up the pace to match Taylor's impatient stride from before, and arrived at what looked like the entrance to a parking garage.
You don't suppose? Taylor asked, hopeful, and started running towards the entrance.
He ran behind her and grabbed her arm before she reached the threshold.
As I said, I hate freshman class. You weren't planning on crossing without me, were you?
Well, you would have caught up with me. This leads home, doesn't it? She asked, suddenly realizing what she was about to do.
What on earth made you think that? There are doors everywhere. This might have opened to the middle of the ocean, or a planet on the other side of the galaxy. He frowned, irritated.
Judging by your luck, one without an atmosphere.
So, what if we both pass through the door and end up in deep space? She started reconsidering her options and quickly assessed how long it would take the embassy to verify her citizenship and help her with repatriation procedures.
I've been teaching this class for decades, give me some credit, will you? Since I'm still here, I obviously did not expose myself to space, he mumbled in a really crabby mood, which made Taylor assume the class wasn't exactly proceeding as planned.
And stop looking for a door, a passageway can be anything that connects two otherwise disjointed spaces, a bridge, a crosswalk, a teleconferencing session, a bus. Remember that the return portal always has some property that reminds you of the point of entry.
Look around, what do you see that feels reminiscent of the Stone Gate? It does not have to be physically accurate, it is more of an emotional response.
The garage opening wasn't a bad choice, but that's not it.
She looked around, but nothing looked familiar, nothing that would draw her attention enough, so she sighed and looked down, surprised by the fact that she'd been standing on top of a storm grill the entire time. How strange, she thought. They make storm grills out of perforated concrete here, and then realized that her traveling companion had started laughing. Well, I've done worse, he conceded. You don't seriously consider going down the storm drain, do you? She asked, alarmed. Unless you want to stay here, he replied, that's our ticket home. And how are we going to go through it together? She asked, suddenly recovering her smart aleckness. Hold my hand and jump, he said, and pushed her in first. Well, it looks like our class is over. I'll see you tomorrow at 4. He told her, as if nothing had happened at all, and she realized she was in room number 8, sitting in her chintz chair and looking at the door that opened to her room. Don't forget to read your notes, there will be a quiz later. And take some time to ground yourself and get reacquainted to your surroundings. As I said, time can be a pretty personal experience, you don't want to look disoriented. Taylor went back to her room and took a few minutes to stop shaking, and then just sat on her bed with her arms wrapped around her knees for an indefinite amount of time, her mind voided of any thoughts. She was brought out of her trance-like state, which would have made her the envy of every lady in her mother's yoga class, by a familiar knock on the door. It was Christine. Weren't we supposed to meet at the cafeteria at 4? She asked. I was there for an hour and a half, Taylor replied. I'm surprised you didn't see me. Well, you must have come in way early, cause it's only 5 past 5 now. Christine looked at her watch. And no, I didn't see you. Where were you sitting? Taylor looked at her alarm clock to confirm the time differential. Doesn't matter now, she said. Hey, do you still want to go see a movie later? Christine asked. I'd love to, but I've got a mountain of homework I have to catch up on, she said, at the same time observing, stunned, that all the assignments had been completed in her own handwriting, and were laying in the same spot where she remembered dropping the neighbor's notes earlier. You don't have to lie to me, girl, Christine chided her. If you don't want to go, why don't you just say so? I'm sorry, Taylor mumbled, confused. I can't believe I forgot about finishing these, she said, staring at the completed assignments. It's been a long day. So, do you still want to see that movie? She asked her friend, who immediately forgot her grievance, happy to have company for the evening. Have you found out who moved in room number 8? Christine asked, and her innocent question took Taylor by surprise. She couldn't figure out whether to tell her friend the truth, a portion of the truth, a vague interpretation of the truth, or avoid the question altogether. She opted for the last choice. No, not yet. But the good news is they stop with the noise, whoever they are. They must have finished moving in. She smiled casually at her friend. I'd still go talk to them if I were you. Aren't you a bit curious what all the fuss was about? Christine insisted, eyes shining. Maybe, I've been busy, you know? I've got enough on my plate as it is. Taylor dodged her question. Her friend didn't really care all that much about the activities in room number 8, she was just trying to show interest in Taylor's life and strike a conversation, so she deemed the subject exhausted and picked a different one. Did your mom call? She asked, and Taylor realized that she hadn't checked her phone for almost 12 hours. No, she replied. Well, I wouldn't fret about it, she's probably busy. Christine tried to comfort her. Yeah, that's probably it, Taylor replied, with full knowledge of the fact that the situation begged to differ. So, what do you think about school so far? Her friend tried to nudge some conversation out of her. What do I think? Taylor asked herself. She was still doubting her sanity and whether any of the events in the last 2 days really happened, and she worried that stress must have finally gotten the better of her. Under normal circumstances, she would have sought help for her emotional cognitive dilemma, but she still had a little piece of the storm drain grate in her pocket, a little shard of concrete that had broken off when they strained to dislodge it, and her back still hurt from all the effort it took to do it. Of course, a shard of concrete proves nothing to anybody, not even her, but she knew, deep inside her heart, despite reason and causality, that her experience, however unlikely, had been real. What do I think? she asked herself and strained her mind to figure out an answer to the question, one that didn't involve crumbs of concrete, temporal aberrations, and Sydney's skyline. What do I think? Oh, I'm sure things are going to settle soon, she finally said. It seems a little hectic now. Tell me about it. Christine picked up the conversation and rolled with it. My dorm is a total zoo. There's this guy in the room at the end of the hall. I swear he had a party every night since school started. I can barely get any sleep. I just hope once classes pick up for real, his coach will set him straight. He can't do keggers and train for games at the same time, right? Right? She asked her friend, hopeful for confirmation. I think he has a football scholarship or something. Do you remember Jessica? Taylor didn't. Tall, blonde, physics major, her brother was 1 year ahead of us in high school. She attended private school, her mom arranged it, or something. Well, anyway, she's like totally taken with this guy's friend, total jock, total douche. He and this guy are on the same team, I think, because they're always together, and poor Jessica is following them around like a drunk puppy. Sometimes I want to shake her and lock her up in her room until she comes to her senses. What's this other guy like? Taylor asked, not because she really wanted to know, but any subject that diverted her attention from questioning her own sanity was at this point welcome. You know, average build, black hair, glasses. Nothing out of the ordinary. Taylor didn't miss the similarities, but in light of her recent experiences, she couldn't, for the life of her, imagine that there could be any connection between her neighbor and this person, whoever he was, and at any rate, it was none of her business. Can you believe these guys? I wish I got a free ride all the way through med school for being able to kick a ball around. The conversation was interrupted by a text Taylor finally received from her mother, in which the latter described in more detail than usual the latest and greatest from the book club, how she had to change her yoga class because the instructor moved to LA, and a new installment in the drama of her friend's upsets and reconciliations. She didn't inquire about Taylor's classes, her accommodations, or her new friends. In other words, life had gone back to normal. Well, at least some things don't change. Taylor thought, grateful to be able to recognize the patterns of her old life, such as they were, and breathe a sigh of relief that she hadn't gone completely off the rails just yet. The next day, while she was at the library checking out some reference materials for her assignments, Taylor recognized the now familiar stance and ducked behind a stack of shelves to avoid what promised to be an awkward encounter. How did you do on your class assignments? A dreaded voice whispered from behind her. Are you following me around or something? Taylor protested, irritated that her avoidance scheme had backfired. You haven't figured it out yet, have you? He chuckled. What time is it? It's 4, she said. Care to sit down? We need to go over your findings. Did you read the notes I assigned? He asked. You mean the homework you did for me? What homework? He looked really surprised. You didn't even look at the notes, did you? He frowned, displeased, and scrunched his face to bring the glasses back up on the bridge of his nose. If you think this lackadaisical attitude will allow you to sail through this school, you should seriously reconsider your options. For one, you'll definitely not pass my class. I hate slackers. Here, a copy of the notes. Read them. We won't advance to the next door until you do. He got up before she had a chance to answer and left behind a stack of papers, both printed and handwritten, highlighted and underlined in several colors. Because I didn't have enough reading assignments already, without this exercise in crazy, Taylor thought. She glanced over the top paper, covered in a fine print that seemed to incorporate some vaguely mathematical formulas, and decided the guy was not all there, and maybe dangerously so, well with this stalking obsession of his, and decided that she should go to the student council at her earliest convenience and ask for a room change. Days passed, and in the rush of classes, assignments and social activities, the doors, the notes and her potentially unstable neighbor fell to the wayside. She was kind of surprised when he didn't show up at 4 to disturb whatever activity she happened to be engaged in at the time, and she was even more surprised to notice that the door in the wall between the rooms was gone. She thought she might have dreamed or hallucinated the whole thing, felt glad that the uncomfortable occurrences were a thing of the past, and focused on her schoolwork. After a while, she found the notes which she had mixed up with those from one of her biology classes, thought they were part of that class syllabus, and studied them in detail. She was kind of surprised as of why she had to learn about the folding of hyperspace and wave harmonics in the middle of a course on phenotypic plasticity and polyphenism, but because she had taken the criticism about her lack of discipline to heart, she did her best to cover the material, even if she hardly understood any of it. She just hoped that whatever this was about would not show up on the midterm, filled in the questionnaire to the best of her abilities, and called it done. The following morning, the first thing she saw when she opened her eyes was the fateful door on the wall in front of her. "Oh, God, please make it go away." She closed her eyes really tight, in the hope that when she opened them again, the cursed door will be gone. 15 minutes later, it was still there, so she avoided staring at it the best she could, got ready for school, and spent every spare minute with her friend Christine and her latest gossip. On her way back to the dorm, she rolled her fingertips over the little shard of concrete in her pocket, and wondered what if any of that experience had been real, and if any if it had been, what kind of fool finds herself in Sydney in the blink of an eye, and spends her entire time there crying and panicking, instead of looking around and enjoying the view. She vowed that the next time she found herself accidentally stranded in Zanzibar, or Phuket, or some other equally exotic destination, she wasn't going to repeat that mistake.